Krishna. So once again, welcome everybody. I wanted to begin this session with my own story. Not a story as such, but an incident which forced me to go a little deeper in my lifestyle and really try to find out if I was going wrong somewhere in whatever I was doing. So in the beginning of this year, most of you know, this year of 2012 has been unfortunately a sad year for most of us. Many unwanted, unpleasant experiences in the lives of many people. Well, I was not spared from that as well. In the beginning of 2012, I lost my job. Of course, don't worry, I have a job now. But that incident, Indians, we are not used to such kind of culture, right? Typically, I remember my father, he joined as a trainee in one company and he retired as a engineer from the same company. For 35 years, he did not change his job. The Indian culture is like you take one thing and keep using for long. That's traditionally. But somehow because of the Western influence, the Western culture is use and throw. Right? So therefore, in Indian culture, you marry one woman and then you remain with her for the rest of the life. Right? But in Western culture, there is use and throw. Right? You use a person and then change it. If you don't like, keep changing. So we are not used to it. So definitely, it caused a lot of trouble to me, and I went searching deep inside that there must have been something wrong from my side. I have heard this so many times that whenever you lose something in life, don't lose the lesson. There's nothing wrong in losing things. Things will come your way and you'll keep losing them. That's the way material world is. But if you lose the lesson, then you lose everything. Right? So I was trying to really, what is that one thing which is actually cause this particular, there must be something bad on my side. Because typically when companies ask you to go, they don't say that you are wrong. They say, fine, our strategy is like this, we are changing this. They never admit like that. But then it's for you to understand that there must be something wrong on my side. And in that phase, I was actually attending a few programs and I came across one particular course. It was a course on project management. I attended that course. Something I got from that course which was very, very, very valuable, right? So as the person went on explaining various aspects of project management, he came to one particular aspect called as human resource management. All of you know, HR is a very famous field. And in that, he covered one particular topic, and I said, yes, this is what was wrong with me. This is the answer. And somehow that it just happened to me. It's like, Paramatma can speak to you from anywhere. When Krishna has to speak to you, it's not necessary that he always speak to you from a devotee. He can speak to you from a karmi also. Like Srila Prabhupada was, not well. He was very sick. And one doctor came to see Srila Prabhupada. And when he came to see Srila Prabhupada, he was actually like kind of drunk. Like he was not even... And he said that, Swamiji, actually all your health problems are because you don't do any exercise. Why don't you walk? And Prabhupada took it so seriously. He said, yeah, actually, that's what is lacking. And Prabhupada started having his morning walks. The person who inspired Srila Prabhupada to have morning walks, and Prabhupada morning walks are some of the most inspiring conversations if you hear in tapes. That happened to be a materialistic doctor who was not even in his proper senses probably when he made that comment. Right? So Krishna can speak through from anybody. So that person spoke something very, very relevant, which I felt that, yes, this was wrong in my life. And I had a desire to share it with many devotees because I felt that this can happen to so many people. And somehow I'm planning to share that with today with all of you. He spoke on a particular theory. It's a materialistic theory. It's not something which is spiritual. It's not a siddhanta by any acharya. You know, it's called as Maslow's theory of hierarchy. How many of you heard this? Actually, everybody knows it. So many people know it. So it's very interesting. Now, you know, you may say that why in a Sunday fish class in front of Srila Prabhupada and Radha Gopinath ji are we supposed to discuss something which is published by Abraham Maslow? I mean, how is it connected? So I came across a wonderful verse in Ishopanishad. You know, it says, Vidyamscha avidyamscha yastad vedo bhayam saha avidya murtyum tirtva vidya murtam ashnute. Very beautiful verse of Ishopanishad. What this verse says that there are two types of knowledge. There is vidya and there is avidya also. The vidya knowledge is a knowledge about the soul, knowledge about God, knowledge about consciousness, my eternal position with God. Avidya is the material knowledge, the knowledge that I need in my regular life to maintain my body. What Ishopanishad says is, avidya murtyum tirtva, vidya amrutam ashnute. So with the knowledge of material science, you should transcend death. And vidya amrutam ashnute, and with the knowledge of spiritual science, you should attain immortality. Now, what is the difference? Transcending death and attaining immortality. What is the difference? Oh, it's the same thing, right? So, yes, there is material knowledge and there is spiritual knowledge, right? But what is the most important thing is, you know, in whose hand is that knowledge? How is it being used? Who is the person, right? If there is a material knowledge, and if you give that material knowledge to a devotee, you know, be sure that the devotee will use that material knowledge in preaching about Krishna consciousness. And if you give spiritual knowledge to a materialistic person, then he will use that spiritual knowledge to justify his materialistic motives. It's very natural. It will always happen like that. Right? So therefore, in Vedic culture, it was very particular to whom knowledge is given. Like now we have an information age. If you want to get knowledge, the only thing that you need is an internet connection and Google. That's it. And you can get any knowledge. But that's not what Vedic culture. Vedic culture was a person is seen, his character is seen, only then and then the knowledge is transferred. An example. How many of you have read Prabhupada's Krishna book? In Krishna book, there is one chapter of Krishna and Balaram studying under Sandipani Muni. It's a very beautiful chapter. If you read that chapter, then it's mentioned that Krishna and Balaram, they learned 64 arts in 64 days. They're extremely expert, right? The arts which other persons would probably take a year or more to learn, they learned it in 64 days. And if you see what different types of art they learned, you know, Krishna and Balaram learned an art of making the hairs curly. They learned an art of dyeing hairs with different colors. They learned an art of doing drama. They learned an art of writing script for a drama. They learned an art of presenting a performance in front of a public. They learned an art of making flower decorations. They learned an art of making an aeroplane of flowers. And Srila Prabhupada writes that actually in olden days, there used to be aeroplanes of flowers. You know, that aeroplane can never have a crash. You know, it's just flowers. And they fly. And Prabhupada says the Pushpak Viman that we think hear of in Ramayana was actually an aeroplane made of flowers. And that art existed. Right? And such amazing and fun. Yeah. They learned an art of how to control a person's mind. They learned an art of how to read a person's mind and speak the words accordingly just so that the person feels completely satisfied. So many arts they learned from one person, Sandipani Muni. Just see, you know, they didn't have a maths teacher and a history teacher and a geography teacher separately. Just one Sandipani Muni knows everything, right? When I learned all this, a thought came in my mind that, my God, Krishna and Balaram learned so many art in the Gurukul, and Sudama Brahman also was in the same Gurukul, right? Why did he become a poor man? You know, a person who knows how to dye hairs, how to make a curly hair, you can open a saloon, right? And do a business out of it. You know, you can make a factory of aeroplanes. I mean, what stops you? A Sudama Brahman, going through the same Gurukul, probably learned everything. He remained a poor man. So I discussed with one senior devotee that, how is it like this? So he told me this thing. So in the Vedic culture, not that every knowledge was given to every person. No. Only that is given to you what you deserve to learn, what your karma can handle, how much you can handle. So in this same chapter, Vidyamsha Avidyamsha, if you read the purport of Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada says that the modern education system has created a headache for parents. You know, because everything is taught to students. What they are supposed to learn or what they are not supposed to learn also is taught, whether they have the karmic capacity of accepting it, whether they have the character to digest it. No, everything is given to everybody, no discrimination. That's not how the Vedic culture was. So a materialistic knowledge also can be very, very helpful, provided, you know, you have the right, and of course I don't say that I have a right understanding, but somehow when I was hearing that particular presentation, it really appealed to me so much, so that I felt that I must share that. So the board is very far. I don't think I can use it. Okay, fine. So we will just go ahead. So this Abraham Maslow, he spoke this theory of motivational needs. And he kind of mentioned that what really motivates a person to work, right? So he said, okay, you know, initially, the most essential need for a person is food. You know, if there is no other reason for you, but definitely you will work for food. You know, anytime somebody tells you, okay, now leave your job. You know, like even the example of Murugari and Narad Muni, right? When Narad Muni kind of convinced Murugari that, you know, your profession of hunter is very wrong. You should stop this. The first question was, okay, to fir khane ko kya milega? What will I eat? Narad Muni said, don't worry, I will send all the food. Write that. So the first thing that a person threatens in life, if he doesn't have a job or doesn't have a source of income, is food. So Abraham Maslow says that this is the most basic need. Food, water, sunlight, air, and four walls and a shelter to stay. These are the primary basic needs of any person. A person will always work for at least these things. Right? Once these needs are fulfilled, what he says is that you go to the next level. Okay, I get my food every day. I have a shelter today. Right? But what about tomorrow? It's like I'm sleeping today and tomorrow the owner comes and okay, he kicks me out of the house. Then there is no stability, right? So once your basic needs of physical bodily needs are fulfilled, then you think about security. A job which will give me money every day, a food which will come every day, a shelter which will be there every day. Like you need insurance also. Something that will take care of your security. Stability, right? Once a person is, his hunger is satisfied, he has a stable stability in life, then the next thing that he worries about is socializing with people. That's what he says, right? So typically a person who has problems in having his food also, or a problem to shelter also, will never think of marrying also. And he'll say this, and nobody will marry him also, probably. You don't have sufficient food to eat, and you know, where's the question of marrying, right? So a person thinks of establishing relationship and spreading his social circle when the primary needs are fulfilled. And then he comes to the need of this socializing. He can, so now he wants a job by which he can say in the public that, okay, I have this type of job. You know, I am at least something, I have a worthy, so people will at least talk to you, right? So that is the next level. Now, what Maslow says is something very nice. Now, see, a person's food is satisfied. You have a security in life, so there is nothing wrong going to happen to you ever. And now you have nice family, friends, kinsmen, and everyone to talk to. Right? Now, what does a person need in life? Tell me. If all these things are satisfied, you know, nice. If I have a nice job where I get food to eat, I have a house, and my life is secured, and I have nice friends whom I can talk to, I can talk, and then I have a bill bag in my hand, and I'm all done. I don't need anything else, right? What Abraham Maslow says is that maximum number of people, they remain satisfied at this stage. My security is done, everything is fine. He says, but there is one problem. You may also think that, oh, this is very nice, right? Sometimes we see, okay, we'll go to Vrindavan. I'll stay in a place. So I have my food. You know, I have my japa bid bag. I have friends to talk to. And what else I need in my life, right? I'm completely happy. Abraham Maslow says that these people have one problem, right? One big problem. He says that whatever they deliver and whatever they work, the quality and quantity of that work needs constant monitoring. You understand what I'm saying? An example. One of my friends recently shared this with me. He said there was one person who was standing in his balcony in front of a garden. And two government servants, they came in that garden, right? And he was just watching them. So what they do? So these two servants came in the garden. So they look very fresh. They were very happy talking to each other. You see, so these are the people whose all these three needs are completely fulfilled. Right? Nobody's going to take their job away. Right? Nobody is, you know, they have the nice friendships also. And they are getting their nice food to eat. All three needs are fulfilled. Okay, they come to the garden. One person sits on a bench, lies down. Other person started digging the ground. He dug a big pit, very nice pit. This took around 2-3 hours. So then it was around noon time. So another person woke up who was taking rest. They both sat together, had their nice lunch tiffin, talked nicely, had fun, right? Then the first person lied on the bench. The other person started working. He came and he took all that sand which had been taken out by this man while digging the pit, and he put it in that pit again. Make everything very nice and clean. And this took around 3-4 hours. So by that time it was 4 or 4:30 in the afternoon. So then both they got up and they were very happy. Oh wow, you have done a fantastic job. They had a nice blissful smile, and all this person is watching all this. And then they just left the garden and said, what kind of people are these? One person just comes in the morning, ducks a pit. Other person just finishes and, you know, they're happy that they have done today's work. They're completely satisfied. So he came, he said, you know, how can you be satisfied? You know, you just dug the pit and this looks like foolishness to me. They said, no, we have done our job. He said, how? How have you done your job? What did you do? They said, actually, we are a team of 3 people. And we were sent here to plant a tree. But the second person is absconding today. He has not come. He didn't come with the tree. But that doesn't mean that we cannot do our job, right? So we have to do our job. So we did our job, right? So this type of mentality requires monitoring, you know? If there is no monitoring, then the quantity of the work and the quality of the work will be severely jeopardized. If such a person is working under you, then may God bless you. Because there's a constant, how many of you times you have employed carpenters or people who work in your house, they do make your walls and everything right, you know, they work on your walls. And how many times you have experienced this in your life, that you just don't attend to it for 2 or 3 days, and when you come back, what they have created is something horrible, right? Because try to understand, these are the people whose basic preliminary needs are already met. They don't have to attend anything in life. They have their money, they have their food, and they have their relationships, right? So they will just do a shabby job. That job will require constant monitoring, right? So therefore Maslow says that these type of people, if you remain in this type of consciousness, you know, it's very, very bad. So here actually I got an answer to my question which I was looking for. Because sometimes being devotees also, you know, this type of consciousness enters our mind also, right? that as long as, you know, I have my food, I have my salary with me, you know, I have my Krishna, you know, Krishna will take care. You know, Krishna will manage. I don't have to really make an effort to monitor the quality of my work. You know, Krishna will manage everything. You know, what happens is slowly, slowly, this type of tendency, it creeps into our chanting also. Because see, you cannot separate spiritual life and material life. Now, you cannot say that as a devotee, I'll be a very sincere devotee, and as a materialistic, I'll be a completely sloppy person. That cannot go hand in hand. You know, because spiritual life is like a revolution. It's like it's your heart is getting plowed. So a person who is actually in spiritual life, if this tendency of, you know, doing a sloppy job comes into his mind, it goes into his chanting, and that starts affecting all his devotional services. That will start affecting your deity worship. That will start affecting your cooking. That will start affecting your serving. That will start affecting everything. So I still remember one time, you know, Gaurang Prabhu, I asked Gaurang Prabhu once in Yatra. I said, Gaurang Prabhu, I want some service, right? Gaurang Prabhu said, since morning, hundreds of people have come to me asking for some service. He said, there is no dearth of devotees who come to me to ask for some service. He said, but the problem is, it's very difficult to find a person who is committed to his service. He says, I tell a person that you be here for some time, 5 minutes, and another devotee will come and meet you and he'll give you something to do. And 5 minutes afterwards, when I come there, that person is missing. Right? So Dwarkadish Prabhu made this very important point, if you remember last Sunday feast. He said, in Krishna consciousness, nothing is ordinary. The only thing that is ordinary is our stupid consciousness. Right? Why our consciousness becomes like this ordinary? Because we let this tendency of being satisfied with food and shelter and friendship all in my life. And with that consciousness enters into our bhakti, that becomes extremely dangerous. So then what Maslow says, he says, but there's a further one level of evolution after this third stage, right? And he calls it as a stage of self-esteem. Now it's very interesting. Now, please do not misunderstand self-esteem with a person who is egoistic. Please do not misunderstand self-esteem with a person who is a upper middle class or upper class background. Nothing to do like that, right? So there's a wonderful story which demonstrates what is this stage of self-esteem. There was once upon a time a sculptor. You can understand a sculptor, right? So he was like, there was one sculptor and there was a temple construction going on, right? It's an ancient story. And the sculptor was there and he was actually making his nice idol or murtis, deities out of it. And a person was passing by. And he looked at the sculptor and he said, my dear sculptor, you know, it's really nice that deities that you're making. He says, how many of these are you going to make? Because I want to have one. Because I really like them. So he looked at this man with a question face and he said, oh, what do you mean how many? I'm just making one. Why are you saying how many are you going to make? You know, I'm just making one deity. So this man said, no, but I can see the exact same deity that's here. It's very beautiful. And now you're making another one which is exact same. I said, oh, no. He said, actually what has happened is that there's a small crack in the nose of that deity. He said, what? He said, yeah, therefore I'm making another one. So he went very close to that deity and he saw the small crack in the nose. So he said, just for this small crack you're making another one? He said, where are you going to fit this deity? Tell me. So the construction was going on, so he took his hand. He went inside, somewhere behind the main altar, in top corner, in one, he said, this deity is going to go there, in that corner. He said, man, I said, you're mad? He said, one small crack on the nose, the deity is going to go in the corner of the temple, and you are spending your valuable time to make another one? He says, who is going to see that there is a crack in the deity in that corner? Who is going to understand it? So the man with a very firm look, looked to this other man and he said, what do you mean, who is going to see? He said, I am going to see. And he said, I will know. And he said, I will know this fact that I made a mistake and I didn't do anything about to rectify it, and I'll not be able to sleep over it. Right? This is a stage of self-esteem. Right? This person, and you may say this is an imaginary story, but my dear friends, you know, if you heard the lectures of Radhana Swami Maharaj, there's one temple in Barsana Dham, which is called as Kushal Bihari Mandir. It's a very beautiful temple. You know, when the temple was built, right, the king built this temple for Srimati Radharani, and Radharani finally came to the dream of this person and said, I don't want to stay in this temple. But if you see this temple, right, even if you go to the corners of those temple, you will see very intricate designs, right, whom people are never ever going to go in that corner and do it. So when I heard this story for the first time in my life, the first thing that came to my mind was that just see the richness of the Indian culture. Now a sculptor, right? What do you feel, which varna does a sculptor belongs to? Is a sculptor a Brahmana? Is he a Kshatriya? Is he a Vaishya? He's a Shudra. So just see the Indian culture, richness of Indian culture. Even a Shudra was on the self-esteem platform. Right? Even a Shudra, you would give a particular task and the task is done. There is no question of monitoring. There is no question of follow-up. Right? And that's how a Shudra was. How was the culture so rich? Because all the basic needs of the Shudras, the food, the shelter, the family, the society, everything was taken care of by the king. The king would finance everything. You need a house? Okay, I'll provide you a house. Your children need education? I'll provide them. You know, you need food and everything? I'll provide them. You just do the deity. You just create deities. You just create idols. That's all. And that's why they would do fantastic jobs. Right? So this was the culture. Right? So what is the striking difference between the people who are in the lower stages of needs and a person who is motivated by self-esteem? The main difference is that this person, the quality and the quantity of his output will always be reliable and dependable. Right? You know? And just give me a minute. So because they're extremely reliable and dependable, right, they have extreme level of integrity. And if we read the scriptures, you see what actually inspired Kamsa to spare the life of Devaki was this integrity in Vasudev. Right? Like when Kamsa was about to kill Devaki, you know, Vasudev interfered. He said, you know, why are you killing her? You know, actually, you have threat from the eighth son of this lady. Fine. I will see to it that I will give you each and every son who is born. I will promise you. And that convinced Kamsa. Why? Because he knew that Vasudev has that level of integrity. Right? He is a man on the self-esteem platform. He is not going to budge away from the promise that he has given. You know? A person who is not on that platform, believe me, if he's on the lower levels, there is no need for him to satisfy any promises. He may just run away. Right? He will be probably a person who will run away. But Vasudev, he knew, surely, wouldn't have run away. Hanumanji, what made Lord Ram have complete faith in Hanumanji? The task was given to the monkeys that go and find Sita. Right? The task was given. These set of monkeys, they did not find Sita, but they did not return back. Right? Even they went to the extent of, they said, okay, now we will commit suicide because we have not found Sita. Right? But we cannot go back unless and until, you know, Sita is found. So whatever work is given to this person, it's always fulfilled and is always satisfied. And another very striking example which occurs in the Chaitanya Charitamrita pastime is the pastime of this Brahmana. This Brahmana who was asked to read Bhagavad Gita by his Guru Maharaj. Now he was an illiterate person. Guru Maharaj told him that you read 18 chapters of Gita every day. Right? So he kept on reading all the 18 chapters of Gita every day. Even though he did not know how to read. But that attracted the attention of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally came there. He said that, oh, you know, this is what we, this, he's the real knower of Bhagavad Gita. What happened to him? As he was reading Bhagavad Gita, because he followed the order of spiritual master as it is, he was seeing this wonderful picture of Krishna sitting on the chariot and driving the chariot of Arjuna, right? And becoming a servant of his own devotee. And that was bringing tears to his eyes, right? The only quality he had was that he had this integrity. He had that self-esteem, right? He wanted to live on that stage. So, now what is that thing which actually pushes a person from this lower levels of motivation up to the level of the self-esteem? That I want to perform something which is nice and which doesn't need monitoring, and you know, I want to give a quality output. What is it that one very strong thing which actually makes a person do that is his family upbringing, right? A person is right from the childhood cultivated like that, you know, to be trustworthy, to be integral, you know, he performs that very easily. Like there is a very famous saying, Raghukul Reet Sada Chali Aayi, Prana Jai Par Bachana Jai. You heard this? So Raghukul Reet, that means in the whole dynasty of Lord Ram, right, the concept was once the vachan is given, once the word is given, there is no question of turning back. So even though when Dasharatha Maharaj promised Vishwamitra Muni, though, yes, I will give you anything that you want, he said, okay, give me your two children. Immediately gave. Although there was a resistance, right? But pran jai par vachan na jai. Why? Because in that whole family lineage, that culture was there. And if you study Bhagavad Gita, we see that very much in Bhagavad Gita also. Like, if you read the second chapter, the entire first chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna is expressing his lamentation, right? And where does it end? Where does the first chapter of Gita ends? Where Arjuna has lost all motivation, right? He sits like with his hand on his head, not willing to fight, right? What is the first thing that Krishna speaks? Right? In this, the second verse of the second chapter, the first thing that Lord Krishna speaks to Arjuna, he says, Kutastva kashmalam idam vishame samupasthitam. From where has this come upon you? From where have you started thinking like this? Kutastva. And Srila Prabhupada in his chapter explains very beautifully what is the meaning of this kutastva. Srila Prabhupada says that essentially whom Arjuna is with, try to understand who is this person. He is Lord Krishna. And even Vyasadeva, when he is writing this in Bhagavad Gita, he says, Shri Bhagwan Vacha. So, Srila Prabhupada first explains who is this Bhagwan. He is a person who is full of all opulences. Unlimited wealth, unlimited knowledge, unlimited wisdom, unlimited renunciation, unlimited beauty. Right? And he is sitting with that person and he is having problems with motivation. So, Krishna is not happy with that. He says, Kutastva, man, from where this has come to you? And then secondly, he says, Anarya Jushtam Aswargyam Akirtikaram Arjuna. He says, your behavior is like an Arya. He says, you are actually an Arya. You are coming from the family of Bharat Maharaj. Your mother is Queen Kunti. Just see her character. Right? So with coming from such family lineage and having a friendship with me, you are not supposed to show this type of behavior. Right? What was Arjuna saying? Arjuna was saying that, I will not fight. I will rather be a beggar. So actually he was trying to fall into those lower three statuses, that I have my food, I have my shelter, and everything is there. What is the need to fight? Krishna did not like that. And Krishna said that it will bring infamy upon you. You have to perform your best. Right? So Krishna told him that instruction very clearly. Now, if devotees actually gain this level of status in their life, that they are always performing their best. Yeah, another thing, sorry. The second thing through which a person can come to this level of self-esteem is by performing duties according to one's own acquired material natures. If a person is a kshatriya and he behaves as a kshatriya, he's definitely supposed to perform very nicely. He will obviously perform well. If a person is by nature a brahminical person and he performs brahmana duties, he will perform very well. Right? It will always be like that. So by establishing the varnashram system also, one can actually come to this level. So when a devotee behaves on this particular level of self-esteem and he, you know, whatever he does is respectable, then it's very nice. However, there is one problem. If you study Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita very nicely in third chapter. He says that you are supposed to perform your duty to the best of your capacity. Right? And when you do your duty to best of your capacity, obviously the result will come. You will get fantastic results. But then Krishna says that, but when the result comes, you should not be attached to it. You should not have any attachment. So then, you know, Arjuna is thinking, okay, I am supposed to perform my duty to the best. And when the result comes, I am not supposed to be attached to it. How is it possible? What is it that completely stops me from doing this? So then he asks this question to Lord Krishna, that what is it that is going to stop me from this? And Krishna says, it is lust only, O Arjuna. So in third chapter, Krishna says, this is lust in your heart. That lust will not let you, you know, remain detached to the results of your activity. You will remain attached. You will perform your work accordingly, nicely, but then you will still remain attached. So that lust has to go away. So here comes the main pitfall. So what Maslow says, that beyond this level of self-esteem, when a person actually loses complete attachment to results of his work, he has nothing else to attain his life, he goes to the last level of the motivation, which is known as self-actualization. And Maslow calls it as self-actualization, but for all of us, our devotees, we should know that it's basically nothing but self-realization. Right? What happens on that level? When a person is on the self-realized stage, he has, nobody can force him to do any work. He is not obliged to perform any activity. Right? An excellent example is the example of Jad Bharat in Srimad Bhagavatam. You see, Jad Bharat, he was a very elevated personality. Right? His all activities were completely absurd. You know, he wouldn't, you know, perform his morning duties properly. You know, after morning duties, you are supposed to clean your, you know, body. Sometimes he would clean his body first, then perform his morning duties. So everything was very absurd. So his family thought that he's a completely foolish person. They made him stand in the, you know, field like a scarecrow, that just stay here and take care of everything. And then, you know, band of robbers was passing through, and they wanted to perform a kind of, you know, they wanted to offer a human being to their goddess Kali. And they picked him up, and he didn't say anything. He was like completely normal. They took him to Goddess Kali. You know, they wanted to kill him. Just when they were about to kill him, Goddess Kali appeared from the deity. She saved his life, but he was still completely not concerned, not talking anything, right? And again, after some time, he was again standing in the field like a scarecrow. And then a set of people came, and they were actually the palanquin carriers of a king, right? And one of the palanquin carriers, he was not doing well. So they said, okay, now you please come and carry this palanquin. So he went. And as he was carrying, you know, the ants were coming in the way and he was stopping. And that created a lot of problem for the king. And then the king became very angry. The king fired him. He said, what kind of, you know, worker are you? It's giving you so much of problem. At that point, he said, you know, you may be a king in this life and I may be your servant. But in next life, you know, I can be king and you could be servant. And then the person understood. He said, this man is not an ordinary man. He's a saint. And then Jad Bharat started speaking more and more and more. And Jad Bharat completely told the wonderful Krishna conscious philosophy to this king. The king was so impressed that he became his disciple. After the king became his disciple, Jad Bharat just left that place and went away. Right? So nobody could force him to stay there. Nobody could force him to do any job. Whenever it came to his mind that he has to perform a task, he did the task in a fantastic way. In his household activities, he was a dumb person. But when the chance came for him to speak philosophy, he spoke the philosophy in the best way. Right? So when a person is on the self-actualization stage, the only thing that inspires him to work is not money, it's not security, it's not food, it's not the esteem or recognition, The only thing that inspires him to work is pure love. And therefore, whatever he performs on that level is always completely marvelous. Like there was one lecture which I remember Vishwarupa Prabhu was giving here. And he was explaining about one particular Jhulan festival in Vrindavan. So he explained that, you know, how many gopis does Krishna have, right? So any of you know how many gopis are there? Sisi Navalan? Eight? Krishna had unlimited gopis. That's the answer. And when Krishna performs Jhulan, he wants to perform swing pastime, then it is explained that how the swing pastime takes place. So Krishna goes to a forest, right? And in that forest, there are swings, right? And then the gopis swing on those different swings. And it is mentioned, it's like an area which is all decorated with nice flowers. And there are unlimited gopis there. So there are unlimited swings. And some gopis said that they swing to and fro. Some gopis, they swing sideways. And some gopis swing in circle. And all this is happening in that one small area. Unlimited gopis, unlimited swings, and unlimited different types of motions. And it's happening in that small area. How can it happen? Right? Because everybody who is engaged in that entire activity is on the self-actualization platform. The only thing that is motivating them to work is pure love. So whatever they do is miraculous. It cannot be understood. So when this entire swing pastime happens, you know, even demigods come in the heaven and they want to watch how it's happening because they cannot understand. When Lord Krishna performs Ras Leela, if you read Krishna book of Srila Prabhupada, it's mentioned that the way Krishna was dancing, he was looking like a fire band, right? And the Gandharvas would come to accompany Krishna through their musical instrument, but the Krishna's steps are so wonderful that they cannot even play their instruments, right? And the Ras Leela goes on for so long and so wonderful that even demigods are completely bewildered. Because try to understand, demigods are the personalities who are on the self-esteem stage, right? They perform their duty very nicely. They don't need monitoring. It's not that, you know, Lord Vishnu or Lord Brahma comes all the time and they say, okay, hey, tumhe barish gira hai kya abhi, Indra? And sun, you know, not that, you know, they have some temperature meter that, you know, Brahma comes and puts it on sun god, said, okay, you are too hot, man. It's not proper. You know, please. They perfectly know how to do duty. They don't need any monitoring. They will do everything very perfectly well. No monitoring required, right? But when the things are happening on the self-actualization stage, they become completely mesmerized. How is it happening like this? It is miraculous. Another wonderful thing, if you go to New Vrindavan in the United States of America in West Virginia, there's a wonderful place called Prabhupada Palace of Gold. How many of you have seen this place? This Prabhupada Palace of Gold is a masterpiece of architecture. Different students of architectural college, not of India, but of United States, they come there to visit and see the beautiful architecture of Palace of Gold. And who created this Palace of Gold? The disciples of Srila Prabhupada, who did not know anything about architecture. How could they create this masterpiece? Right? Because they were on the self-actualization stage. Right? They had nothing to attain in their life. They had no money. They did not need any money. They did not need any prestige. They did not need any recognition. And they did not even need any monitoring. Right? But the work which was done was so well that it became a masterpiece. And the most wonderful and common example that we all face of the person who is on the self-actualization stage is a mother in the house. Right? Is there any husband who gives a monthly salary to his wife for being a mother? No. Is there any child who gives a salary to his mother? No. A child may not even sometimes say thank you. Right? Like how Shamanam Prabhu was recently telling us that sometimes, you know, a child comes to the mother and says, "Oh, my dear mother," you know, because the mother has cooked something very nice. The child likes it, right? The child comes to the mother and says, "Oh, my dear mother, you know, you are the best mother in the whole universe." And the mother actually starts feeling, "Oh, wow, I'm really best." And when the child, the same mother gives some punishment to the child, again the same child comes to the mother and says, "You are the worst mother in the whole universe." And the mother has to hear all that, right? There is no option. But still she will get up early in the morning. She will cook prasad for her husband. She will cook, make the tiffin for her children, right? She will make everything. Sometimes there may not be any, there never will be any salary. Sometimes there may not be any words of appreciation. And there's absolutely no monitoring. Who is monitoring a woman? Not that there is some supervisor in the house who I have, you know, and then, you know, so that see whether my wife gets up early in the morning or not, whether she cooks prasad properly or not. Absolutely no supervision required. But everything is done properly. Why? Because it is on a self-actualization stage. Right? So what actually Lord Krishna wants all of us to be on, and what Srila Prabhupada wants all of us to be on, is all devotees on this self-actualization stage. Right? But please try to understand that you cannot jump to the level of self-actualization unless you have passed to the level of self-esteem. Oftentimes what people feel that I can directly jump to this level of self-actualization without being responsible in my life, without having responsibilities in my life, without being extremely cautious about what I give, what I work for, and I can directly jump to that level directly from this place. Therefore, sometimes, you know, what you see is, I remember this example which Sridharam Prabhu told me. He said that one time he was passing through this door and there were two devotees standing there, you know. And one devotee said that, you know, "Prabhu, you know, you are so great. I am just like a worm in the stool." He said like that. And the other person said that, "You may be a worm in the stool, but I am like a worm in the stool of the worm." And another person said, "No, but actually I am like the worm in the stool of the worm of the stool of the worm," whatever, something like that. And that went on for quite some time, right? So these type of dialogues a person may speak when he's on the self-actualization stage, right? But then you see, you know, sometimes there is a some nice festival is there. There is Sharad Purnima Darshan is there, or Pushyabhishek is there. And the same devotees will now fight to enter into the door and sit in the front place. Correct? So all that self-actualization just disappears. Right? Because there has to be responsibility. Unless you are responsible in your life, you know, that creeps into everything into your devotional service. So you cannot jump to that stage. Right? So when you are in staying in the society, you know, the society expects you to be on that level. And if you are not on that level, then that is not going to impress the people about whom you are connected to. There's a wonderful story in this regard, wonderful analogy in this regard, which one Shikshashtakam Prabhu gave. And it was a very wonderful analogy. And he said, he spoke that when this Govinda's restaurant was getting opened. You know, so he was, Govinda's restaurant was, that was the opening ceremony, and many brahmacharis were there. And Radhana Swami Maharaj asked Shikshashtakam Prabhu to speak. Do you want to speak anything? And he spoke something very nice. He said, in this restaurant, he says, there is wonderful food which is being cooked inside. Right? There's a chef who cooks the food. Right? Then there is a person who takes the order and goes inside and informs that this is to be cooked. There's a person who actually keeps the things ready on the table. Right? And then there are these waiters who actually get this dish and they actually pick up this dish and put it in front of you on your table. Right? So out of all these people, and then there is a manager of this restaurant, and then there is a person who's actually recruiting people, and so many, this whole chain of people, right? But who are the actual people who are interacting with the customers? They are the waiters. So, the person who is actually eating the food is not coming inside and seeing how the chef is behaving. You know, he is not coming in finding out who is the chairman of this restaurant. He has no interest with that, right? His total experience about how the restaurant is based on how the waiters are behaving with him, correct? He said, like that, in Krishna consciousness, we are also like this front door waiters, you know? So Srila Prabhupada is like the main chef. No, he has cooked this wonderful philosophy. I mean, he has not cooked it, of course, out of his own mind. It's coming from the Sampradaya. But he is a person who has put it in his books, right? But the people who are actually going to interact with Srila Prabhupada, you know, they're actually going to interact with all of us who are like waiters, who are getting it from Srila Prabhupada and passing it on to people, right? So suppose if you come to a hotel and you sit in a restaurant and a waiter comes to you and he says, Bolo, kya chahiye? I said, you actually go through the menu and you say, okay, I want this and this dish. Theek hai. Goes inside, brings that out, bangs it in front of you on the table. Le lo. You know, what will be your impression? Will you come to the restaurant again? It's not possible. Right? Similarly, who is Srila Prabhupada? What is the character of Srila Prabhupada? That people are going to judge based on how you behave in your personal life. So if you go to your offices and you work in a very sloppy way, which constantly requires monitoring, which constantly requires follow-up, you know, what is the impression people are going to have about Srila Prabhupada? This is what this person has learned in Krishna consciousness movement. Right? You are the front door waiters who are actually carrying the message. Therefore, if we may not be actually able to come to the stage of self-actualization, but at least we should come to the level of self-esteem and not compromise in the quality of our work that we provide. You see? So this is very important. So therefore, for a devotee, you should always make an effort. Now, how can a devotee actually gradually go to this level of self-actualization? So Srila Prabhupada says that is simply possible by attentive hearing and chanting. When you actually do your hearing and chanting very attentively, right, then you are actually serving Lord Krishna. Right? When you are not careless or irresponsible in your japa, in your devotional service, then same mood gets continued everywhere. Right? That same mood gets passed on to all your devotional services. And that's how, by sincere devotional service, by attentive hearing and chanting, you know, a devotee can actually come slowly to the level of this self-actualization. So, in this way, you know, one can perfect his life, and in this way, he can be a good preacher. Actually, I didn't have much to share. Thank you very much. If anybody has any questions, then we can take. Hare Krishna. Oh, there's a question. Okay.
No. Hare Krishna Prabhu. Hmm. You spoke about the sculptor, you know, there was a small crack in the nose of the deity and he read it many, many times. And you said a devotee cannot be sloppy in material life while he tries to be sincere only in spiritual life. Okay, as I go to office, okay, so when I go to office, my consciousness is, you know, do your work until 6 o'clock, come back, you know, try to have as much time for spiritual life, you know, try and finish as many rounds in the morning, and balance rounds are still pending to be completed in the evening. So the consciousness is not to try and do the best of, you know, what I'm doing in office, you know, as long as I complete the work, and I know there would not be complaints. I know I'm not satisfied with that work. There could be mistakes. I've not done a check. If that means that I have to stay back another half an hour and check it and then send it, I know that if I do that, it'll be a perfect job and I will be satisfied with my work.
Yeah.
But I have a second thought that, you know, if I spend that half an hour, you know, in the office, then I may not be able to complete my rounds for the day. So what is priority to me is to complete the rounds. And I know that this, although it is not up to my level of self-satisfaction, it is to the satisfaction of my boss. It is what he expects. So I have not reached the self-esteem stage, but still I've completed the work. So 99% I leave office, I send that file to him. So in this way, I am sloppy in my material work, but you know, how do you create a balance there? You know, while I'm trying to be sincere in my spiritual life, I am actually deciding to be sloppy in my material life. So,
if it should be as per the expectation. If your expectation is, if the boss has set a particular level of expectation of a quality, then you have to reach to that level of quality. There has to be always a balance between the time that you spend and the quality, because see, every object has a desirable level of quality, right? Like suppose if you make a dish, you're supposed to cook an item, right? The desirable level of quality means when a person eats it, he should not have diarrhea. And that could be the worst thing. And it should be sufficient taste. It should not be too salty or too sweet. You should get the proper taste. If it is on that level, then you have done your job. Now, on top of that, if you want to put dhania and if you want to put some dry coconut and all that, that is your choice. That is a good to have. Right? But the minimum quality which is required is that much. If that much is achieved, then your job is perfect. Right? But if you personally feel that, you know, there could be a rework in this particular, the way I have done it, when it goes to the next person, you know, he's going to find out some mistakes in that. And I'll have to do it again. And that will spoil my name. Then better to spend that half an hour and complete it. You know, a person who is actually on the self-esteem platform, when he goes back, he will not be able to chant his rounds also properly. Because he'll keep thinking of that one mistake which he did in his work. Right? Because that's the way you are setting an example. That's the way people are going to think of Srila Prabhupada when they see you. Right? And believe me, you know, you are perfect in your work. You are doing your work nicely. But next time you go to that person with a 500 rupee coupon and say, please give me some donation, he will just take out 500 rupees and give you in one shot. Because he will say, ye banda sahi banda hai. Ya bandi sahi bandi hai, whatever. Right? Because that's the kind of impression you are setting. Right? Otherwise, you know, it's very difficult. Sometimes, that's what, you know, what the reason which I wanted to speak on this is, sometimes, you know, people who are on this lower three levels, right, they are just concerned with their food, their shelter, and their security, right? And they are very sloppy in their work. You know, sometimes even devotees, when they talk about them, they say, "Arey, he's both transcendental, yaar." So actually, he's not transcendental. He's whimsical. But the way, you know, people put it is, "Arey, he's both transcendental." Basically, he's not responsible. That's what they want to say. But actually, transcendentalism is a self-actualization stage. And you are still on this level only. And that's what exactly Krishna did not want Arjuna to be on. You know, Arjuna was actually trying to come to that level. Therefore, he became very disturbed. And he said, from where this impurity has come into you? Right? How can you do like this? Because if you study Mahabharata, I'm sorry, I'm just speaking about it because it came to my mind. If you study Mahabharata, when Krishna went to Karna, right? And Krishna wanted to convince Karna that, you know, you have, as it is, taken a vow of not to fight because Bhishma Pitama is the Senapati, right? So for that time being, why don't you fight from the side of Pandavas only? So he actually went to Karna and he said that. And Karna said, no, I will not do it. He says, but I want one benediction from you because I know you're God. He said, I want one benediction. So Krishna said, okay, what benediction you want? So Karna said that, you know, I don't want to die outside of battlefield. I want to die in battlefield while fighting. So Krishna has this in mind that Karna has asked a benediction. He doesn't want to die outside battlefield because he wants to maintain that self-esteem. And here Arjuna is now not willing to fight. So that is like a disturbing situation. You know, you are so much banking upon a person. You have trained him so much, right? And his hardcore enemy is wanting to be on a particular level and you are going below that level. It's not acceptable. So Krishna became extremely disturbed when Arjuna said like that. So the whole conversation, if you see, study the entire second chapter, you will see Krishna, he gives so many reasons of Arjuna why he should fight. Right? And then one of the reasons that he says He says that, you know, Arjuna, you are actually showing compassion, right? So you are being very compassionate and you are saying that I will not fight out of compassion. But your enemies are not going to think like that. What they are going to think? They are going to think that you are actually coward. That's why you are not fighting. And you will not be able to take that. You will not be able to take that infamy in your life because you are a Kshatriya. And they are going to think that you are a coward. Similarly, devotees, when we are not performing our job properly, the outside materialistic people, they are not going to think that Arya is actually a devotee. Eh? No matter, he may be not good in his job, but actually he is a great devotee. So we should respect him. No. They are going to say, Arya, he is sloppy in this, that means he'll be sloppy in that also. So therefore, it's better to give your best at that. Whatever is expected, whatever is desired, expected out of you, that much quality we have to deliver. If we go beyond that, then that's your personal choice. But at least that much has to be done. You know, otherwise that will slowly, slowly come in everywhere, that particular characteristic. Therefore, you know, how Dwarkadish Prabhu was explaining about this person, you know, in Yatra sometimes you go and they have this people who stand with an arrow, right? So what is his expected quality? His expected quality is that he has to stand there until the last bus goes. That is what is required. If he does that, then his job is fulfilled. Then he may hold the arrow like this, or he may hold the arrow like this, or he may like this. That is his personal choice. Right? But he has to do at least that much, what is required. You know,
standard that is required has to be met. Beyond that, it is, I mean, it's not up to your self-satisfaction. It is a minimum standard that has to be met.
That we should try to achieve in our life. Because that's how the materialistic people will see you as a devotee. That's how, you know, so that's very important. Yes, bro.
Can I ask? You talked about the self-actualization stage, self-realization stage. Is that where value for life or, you know, the reason to live comes in? Is that where it comes in? Because we see a lot of us, in spite of knowing all this, we still talk on a mobile while driving. Right? Or we still talk on a mobile while crossing the road. So it doesn't kind
or
of
we
match.
Still chant sometime while driving.
Absolutely. And you can't do things, you can't do two things attentively at the same time. So you know, does it equal to value the reason to live, or you know, the reason to that why we are here? Does it come? And if it does come, then why do we still be lax in all of these other things which actually affect in terms of, it's safe, you know, safety. Like if you're driving, you should never be talking on the mobile. It's not safe for us, it's not safe for the person who's on the road. So how does one understand, where are we missing the point?
Yeah, very difficult question for me to answer. But I am very much like you. So this was basically for my own understanding only I spoke. But I personally feel that you know, exceptions should be kept really as exceptions only. I think the problem that happens with us is that once we take an exception, you know, okay, this is fine. It is fine to talk on a mobile when I'm driving. Once you take that exception, then we make that exception as a rule. And that's something which is very wrong. You know, we should let that be an exception only. It is an exception. It should be used only in the exceptional situation. The problem with the material mind is that the mind justifies the exception to make it as a rule. Like in scriptures also, there is a concept of apat dharma. You know, like apat, you know what's an apat kal, right? An apat dharma means like, you know, even if you're traveling in a bus, then there is a one window which is known as apat kalin window. What is it meant for? When accident happens, that time only you should open the window and jump out of it. Now, if everyone starts using it every now and then, you know, people are just, the stop has come, he's not able to get down, so he opens the apatkalin window and jumps out of it. So that means he's making an exception into a rule. And then that becomes a complete practice, a regular practice. So we should have the discrimination of understanding that this is an exception. This rule is only for the case of exception, and I will only use when and when there is exception, and not otherwise. Therefore, like I was hearing this lecture of Radhanath Maharaj, and he said, he was speaking about Madhvacharya. You know, so Madhvacharya, in his philosophy, is a Shuddha Dvaita. According to Madhvacharya, only Krishna is Vishnu Tattva, he was saying. He says, even Radharani is Jiva Tattva. Lakshmi is also Jiva Tattva. Even Balramji is Jiva Tattva. Only Krishna is Vishnu Tattva, strict too. So why like that? He says, because when you take an exception, when you say, oh, no, no, actually Balramji is Vishnu Tattva. So the one exception. And then there is Lakshmiji is also Vishnu Tattva. So that's another exception. And then, you know, so like that you go on. So then person will say, okay, then I am also Vishnu Tattva. Then he is also Vishnu Tattva. Because you give exception to one person, then that exception goes to everybody. So this is always like that. So therefore in spiritual life, you know, we have to be very, very cautious of where we are taking the exception. And we should never make that exception as a rule. We should try to be as sincere as possible. I have personally seen Narayana Swami Maharaj, whenever he crosses the road, he uses the zebra crossing. How many of you have seen that? He will, even if there is no traffic, he goes up to the zebra crossing and then he crosses the road. Why is it so? So that's how, you know, you cultivate the self-esteem platform. Right? I don't know if that answers your question. Hare Krishna. So we should have kirtan. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.